Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and I am here with Michael Brazenly.
Hi everyone.
Dude, and you just did a perfect job on that. Pausing the music, that was well done.
We can keep that doing next episode.
Michael is my new sound engineer. Yeah, very good job there. So, except that I need it to go back to the beginning. So if you could press the back... exactly. Okay, so that way we're ready at the end of the episode. So today we are going to continue our reading from the EL 921, and this is Management's Guide to Handling Grievances. We are now at the bottom of page 16.
Yep.
50 pages, roughly. So
we're already a third way through so
yes,
far?
Yes, we're already a third of the way through. All right, so here we go. Next section, Settlements, Remedies, and Setting Precedent. It is expected that attempts to settle grievances will be made at the lowest possible step of the grievance process. So here
we already
again,
went over that.
Yeah. But that to me, it's worthwhile that it's being reiterated here, right? And this is one of management's biggest problems.
Yeah. Does that mean the supervisor has the authority to?
It does. It says that right in the JCAM too. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Both parties have the authority to settle grievances.
Funny how when they and say, dude, I can't make that decision.
No, and that's part of why. Mm-hmm. The informal A are not precedent setting because it gives you that freedom to do what it takes to just get this settled and you don't have to work. Yeah. I mean,
and here's the thing, that should be a grievance when a supervisor says they can't settle on anything because they don't have the authority.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Right.
If
that's
you,
a separate
if,
grievance.
If you don't
I
have,
agree.
If you don't have authority, it means you should not be sitting in here.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. When they say that, like, my boss has told me I can't settle this. Mm-hmm. All right. Then you're also going to see Article 31 or whatever whatever grievance
that is. And I think our union is allowing this stupidity to go on because the lowest possible means supervisor. Right. Yet the upper management is not giving the authority to settle because why do you think they don't want them to settle?
Dude, the longer it drags on, the better it is for management.
I know, but no, I'm saying, why do you think they don't want to settle on the supervisor?
Because they
make
think
that?
They'll get a better deal further up?
No, because the upper management thinks they're stupid and they can't make their own decisions. Okay. That's why.
Well, they may be right about that. I've met some frontline supervisors. Okay.
But I'm just saying, if this is how they know about supervisors, the ones who's telling us what to do.
Well, that's why supervisors should read this manual.
Right.
All right, so going on. Each grievance... should be reviewed and settlement decisions should be made based on the facts presented and developed by the parties. Please note that a settlement does not necessarily mean that management admits fault or provides some type of remedy. Yeah, I mean, there may be a settlement of some other type, like just something procedural or whatever going on. When appropriate, the parties can settle a case by simply closing the case or agreeing that a violation was not established. Yeah, that's and that totally happens. You know, is I'm going to file a grievance and then I do the investigation and it turns out that they mandated properly that day or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it's not always a grievance. Next, management representatives have the authority to resolve grievances, just like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But with that authority comes the responsibility to ensure settlements are consistent with the national agreement and relevant handbooks, manuals, and published regulations.
Oh, do you mean they have to read the books?
Manuals? They're supposed to.
Like this?
Yeah, just like this one. Okay. Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, dude, I've said it early on. I don't care if a supervisor listens to classes of mail. I want them to know this stuff, too. If we all knew this stuff, we'd be better off.
I'm sorry. They're supposed to follow all handbooks and manuals? Not optional?
It is not optional. No, that's right. Okay. That's right. And we can grieve on all of it thanks to Article 19 of the National Agreement.
Which I think is we're nationwide, we're failing, making sure that management follows the rules.
Well, of course.
Slapping in the head is not working anymore.
I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at the outcome, obviously management is not deterred. Mm-hmm. Okay. So going on with management's responsibilities. Determine the appropriate contractual remedy if a violation is established. Understand the steps necessary for settlement implementation when appropriate. Man, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Right, because if they agree to a settlement, how are we going to actually make that settlement happen? Like if they agree to expunge your discipline, they need to know how to get in there and remove that from the file.
And that's why on the resolve, you always say, hey, this has to be removed by this certain date.
Right. Yeah, that's a good call.
Okay, and then if they don't do it by this certain date, that's another grievance.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Next. And then on that grievance, if they don't do it by a certain day, then you can start asking for monetary remedies.
Right, then we escalate. Right,
and you can escalate the remedy more.
Yeah, if regular grievances aren't working, what are we supposed to do?
Right.
Because we already have the fucking contract. Mm-hmm. The contract is supposed to prevent all this stuff in the first place.
And I like some of the wording that's used in arbitration.
Okay.
For future deterrent of violating the settlement.
Right, exactly.
This is what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, and one of Corey's favorite decisions from aid arbitration was that one in Louisiana or wherever it was that, like, I don't know what that number is, but we're going to find a number where management stops violating the contract. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd sure like to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on, more responsibilities. Ensure that all settlements are in compliance with postal rules and regulations and consistent with the law, including IRS tax regulations. Next, it is extremely difficult to reverse or correct errors made in settlements, and some agreements might affect other proceedings, e.g., Equal Employment Opportunity, Merit Systems Protection Board. Therefore, it is critical that management representatives thoroughly understand the commitments it makes in each settlement. Below are several settlement guidelines that all management representatives involved in grievance processing should be aware of. Relevant provisions of handbooks and manuals should be checked before agreeing to settlements. Ensure regulations are current. And, you know, obviously I agree with that one. Because that's why I'm filing the grievance, because I think that this is what this is my interpretation of the manual or the handbook or whatever. And yeah, we should make sure. Right. And it says that right in the JCAM that you guys should both be reviewing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's the thing. We're both would be reviewing it. But how many times have you gone to settle an agreement and they don't even have a JCAM in with them?
Most of the time.
I don't think I've ever seen them bring it.
So,
but they're supposed to be prepared to argue with you with the contract for a while, and so forth.
I had a phenomenal supervisor. Mm-hmm. She was the best boss that I've had at any job ever. I got really lucky. And when we would sit down for our grievances, she absolutely would pull out the JCAM and we would argue over the provisions. And man, that was great. That's the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Is let's look at what this actually says. Mm-hmm. And there were times when I was wrong and okay, I'm going to withdraw this grievance. It was rare.
Well, if this is what the contract says, and that's...
Yeah, exactly. That. We honor the contract.
Right.
Yep. And she was also really good about saying, yeah, sure enough, this is what the contract says, so I'll go ahead and settle.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's the way it should be. All right, next. Pay remedies may be appropriate in certain circumstances. However, this type of remedy should be reasonably related to any harm done to the employee or grievant, e.g. wages and benefits lost or expenses incurred.
And that is something that the management is starting to use more now, saying what harm was there. Okay. Well, the harm is that you broke the rules.
Sure.
Okay. And that's causing the carrier to more stress or you know.
Right. Like if we can't trust our contract, that is a harm.
Yeah. So when the management is just blatantly violating it,
right?
Then that is the harm and the fact that you're blatantly violating it, saying that you can get away with breaking the rules, but then it's not okay for the carrier,
right?
Is looking at where you're losing respect to the postal service because you're not following the rules,
right?
So that is the harm in the fact that you're saying that the rules can be broken.
And so this is why a cease and desist is a reasonable step,
mm-hmm.
because you can ask management, you know, imagine having a reasonable conversation with management and they say, okay, you're right. This is a grievance. We broke the contract here. All right. What confidence do I have as a steward that you're not going to break this agreement anymore? Because we already had the agreement in the first place. You already broke it. How do I know you're not just going to keep breaking it?
I'm going to say it again. They need to stop hitting them on the wrist.
Yeah, right. And that's where the cease and desist mm-hmm. is like management promising, okay, we're not going to do it and we're going to stop doing it in the future. And that's the cease and desist.
Yeah, but the problem with that, there's so many cease and desist and they still break it anyway.
Right. And then that's where the escalating remedies are supposed to come in after that. You've already said you're not going to do it anymore. You keep doing it. Now what are we supposed to do?
So the problem is this. They'll do that to that one steward. Then they'll do it to another steward. Or they'll go to another station and do it to another steward at a different station.
Right, and this is where leadership comes in.
And so they don't hold them responsible or hold them accountable because they keep violating it with a different somebody else.
Right.
Even though there's a cease and desist, but they know it's a different steward or a different hall or a different city.
Sure, they're going to keep trying it.
They're going to keep on breaking it because they're not holding them accountable.
And this is where leadership and training becomes so critical mm-hmm. because like when the steward calls into the union hall to get that grievance number, you know, you need that institutional knowledge to say like, well, hey, we've had this issue. you know, this is already our established settlement or whatever.
And this is where I think our national needs to put together where there was a cease and desist and this is how it is.
Right.
So that there's no more of slapping on the wrist saying, hey, don't do it again, because it, we already had the cease and desist.
Well.
So there should be some guidelines on how we're going to request what kind of resolve.
Yeah.
On which way for certain things when that happens, because the settlement's already been reached before.
The EL 921 has thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. Let's continue.
Okay.
Financial remedies which exceed these costs or otherwise provide for punitive damages should be avoided. Management representatives dealing with class action payments should review the proposed payees to ensure that all payees fall within the class before finalizing an agreement. It's reasonable. The Egan Accounting Service Center, ASC, needs a minimum of 4 pay periods from receipt of a back pay or pay remedy request to process back pay requests for the prior 3 years. If the back pay includes interest payments, the time frame increases to 5 pay periods. Because of the complexity of paying back pay for a period more than 3 years ago, several more pay periods are required to process these requests.
That sounds like any grievance on pay can go more than 3 years.
It does sound like that.
So it's not 14 days for pay.
Well, I mean, yes. Yeah, so that was, I remember again, aid arbitration. We're going to reference this a lot.
So why is there no 14 days on pay?
Because in an arbitration settlement, and you'd have to ask Corey which one it was. I don't know it off the top of my head.
I can tell you why.
Well, the arbitrator said that you can't memorialize a pay irregularity.
It's also illegal to not pay somebody.
Sure. Right, to not pay. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, like, dude, we got that that text or that conversation we had today with that guy who in his branch, I forget where it was now, it doesn't matter. But like in his branch, the branch treasurer wants to enact this rule that says like, hey, when you get paid as a steward, you have 3 months to come and pick up your paycheck. Oh, it was in Michigan. You have 3 months to come and pick up your paycheck. And if you don't pick it up within that 3 months, it's gone. And
essentially, no, it's not.
Right. Well, that's the issue, because the person who contacted us looked up like Michigan law and like, no, dude, that's your money.
It's not Michigan law. It's a federal law.
Well, it's probably also in Michigan law. It's probably also in Nevada law.
Yeah.
You know,
and, pay is pay.
Right. Exactly. Okay. And
it's actually Department of Labor hours and wage division.
Right. It doesn't just go back to the employer. Or the payer, mm-hmm. you know, that money is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it would go to like an unclaimed property division of your state or whatever. And that's what happens in Michigan. But same here. Like if you're owed pay, they can't just get out of you. Oh, well, you didn't notice for 14 days. You know, that's exceptional.
Right.
Right.
And that is where, you know, management will try to say, hey, you know, you only had 14 days to file that grievance.
Right.
No, because if you don't pay this person, that's a Department of Labor law that you're violating.
Right. Now you're breaking the law. Right. And so this also is why, because it takes this, I didn't realize it takes minimum of 4 pay periods.
That's what it was, but we have updated systems.
Yeah, I don't know when this was written.
Yeah.
So, but regardless, when I file my grievance, part of the settlement is that, like, I will. Management has to show submission into GATS that they submitted for this pay, you know, now it's in the system. And then I don't have a requirement for when it has to actually show up on the paycheck. I need to know that management put it in. If it doesn't eventually show up on the paycheck, we can revisit that. But that's generally how we handle that. Yeah, here.
Because they can make copies of what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the proof that they pay the carrier.
Okay. Next, settlements for compensation should never indicate that payments are to be sent to the union for further distribution to employees. Rather, a list of employees to be paid should be submitted through the normal procedures, e.g. grievance arbitration tracking system, GATS. I agree with that. That would be crazy to just, oh, we'll give the money to the union and then they'll split it up. No, dude, that's how you get self-dealing.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's taxable, right? Because sure. It's pay. So when you pay the union, means what? Union's going to pay that tax for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right, it makes it...
That would be illegal.
There would be a lot of messes here.
Yeah, so that's why they're saying you can't do that, because they would become a tax liability.
And as a union member, just give me that money, you know? Okay, next. Payments made through GATS are considered to be wage compensation and are subject to all normal payroll withholding. Employee claims are not to be paid through GATS.
Oh, I guess I was ahead of myself.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right. Good job, dude. Look at that. Michael correctly predicting what. Okay, next. granting, quote, a day of administrative leave to be used in the future, end quote, is inappropriate and creates issues regarding authority and accountability. That's interesting. That's it. That's the whole statement, mm-hmm. right? It's a blanket recommendation against granting administrative leave. Dude, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's such a valuable remedy because it directly addresses the harm of someone like inappropriately mandated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, today our holiday schedule went up for the Thanksgiving holiday and I got mandated. And I don't even remember seeing the volunteer list because I wouldn't have volunteered. And it was for my designated holiday. And I know that, like, since it's my designated holiday, I'm second on the pecking order. They should have had to mandate everybody on their SDO before they mandate me. And the supervisor says, well, you didn't say one way or the other, and so we're going to use you. And I said, wait a minute, look at the pecking order. It says volunteers.
First.
Right, that they go first on mm-hmm. the pecking order. I didn't volunteer.
CCA's first.
PTF's first.
PTF, then CCA's, yep.
And then overtime people or whatever yeah. it is. Because it's the LMOU
yeah.
is your pecking order, your local memorandum of understanding. And so, yeah, our pecking order.
Yeah, it's in our LMOU, our pecking right, order.
That yeah. it's volunteers. Yeah. So if you don't sign up yes or no, it's a no because mm-hmm. you didn't volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that argument. And dude, to their credit, they said, well, it doesn't have to be done until later today. So we'll make sure we take you off the list. So that's something.
Because they don't pay you extra money, I guess.
Yeah, well.
Because you'll win that grievance.
Oh, yeah, because I win that grievance. That's right. I would get out of schedule pay uh-huh. or whatever it is. Yeah, right. Because I'd be getting the overtime all day regardless because mm-hmm. the grievance.
Yep.
All right, next. All officials should be aware of reporting requirements in cases where settlements involve substantial liability. Make sure a significant potential liability is reported through the appropriate channels.
This sounds like during COVID when they were mandating carriers like crazy and spend millions of dollars on mandating carriers.
Yeah,
like throughout the nation.
What did you say your really big mandate grievance was? Like $50,000 or something?
No. Mandate grievances and overtime equitability.
Uh-huh. That's in, the equitability.
In, yeah, yeah, in that 1 year period, I made over $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably had to go through be reported to the appropriate channel. That good job, Michael.
Yeah, I killed the fiscal money for my station for years coming up. So
yeah, good job.
Yeah, so they have to get approved from the postmaster before they get anything.
Nice. Yeah. All right, moving on. Generally, setting precedent in a grievance decision means that the settlement agreement becomes an enforceable rule. Grievances settled at informal step A cannot be precedent setting for any purpose and should not be stated as such. Grievances settled at formal step A are not precedent setting unless specific language is incorporated into the settlement. Supervisors should discuss with district labor relations before making such an agreement. A grievance resolved at step B establishes precedent only in the installation from which the grievance arose. The meaning of precedent for step B decisions is further explained in the JCAM Article 15. So I have seen management try to use this that, oh, our informal step A agreements are not precedent setting as a way to say essentially they're meaningless. But they are still at least worth the paper they're printed on, in that if you have an agreement that, like what would be an example? Oh, well, like to expunge discipline, you know, right. or something like that. And then it doesn't get done. And so you cite that grievance settlement in your next grievance and they say, oh no, the previous one wasn't precedent setting. You can't cite it. Mm. Bullshit. I can't cite it. It's still its own terms are enforceable.
Yeah. Usually the way it works, is informal A is for your station.
Yeah.
Formal A is for the installation as in like multiple post offices. And then the step B is for that region.
That's not what it says here. No, step B is precedent only in the installation from which the grievance arose.
Okay. So step B is our installation is Las Vegas.
Right. Exactly. Okay?
And then the arbitration is for the whole nation.
There's okay. regional arbitration.
Unless the result is specifically for that installation.
But there's regional arbitration yeah. and national arbitration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's different things. Yeah, there's real complex issues. Yeah.
Mostly we're talking yeah. about informal step A.
Right.
And so again, while it is not precedent setting, yeah. like if you get a settlement in one, let's say Michael was inappropriately mandated, and so he's going to get an additional lump sum payment of $50.
Right. That'll be for
just for that incident.
Station. Yeah.
Right. But then in the next one, I can't say like automatically Michael's going to get $50 because that was its own settlement. That wasn't precedent setting that mm-hmm. says like going forward, everybody gets $50. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference here. All right. Next, grievance arbitration tracking system, GATS. GATS is a postal service system that provides for the tracking of grievances and grievance payouts.
Wow. Did anybody know what GATS stood for before that today?
I did, but I might have been the only one. Yeah, I always like to know what abbreviations stand for.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's nice to have that so that everybody knows what GATS means. Because I can guarantee a lot of stores that says, oh, it's GATS pay, but nobody knew what it stood for.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Dude, at the dock when we're doing our outgoing parcels at the end of the day, it says like machinable parcels, non-machinable parcels, and priority parcels, and underneath of them, they all say non-RTO, Romeo, Tango, Oscar. The fuck is RTO?
Actually, I have no idea.
Yeah. And I've asked like the tractor trailer driver. Mm-hmm. I've asked my supervisor. It's something like regional transport, something. It's like
for operations,
something like that. It's like for parcels that aren't going out. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody's sending a parcel, like the ones we get from CVS Pharmacy where they're sending out the pills, if it goes to another route that's in your station, then that would be an RTO, like that wouldn't go down to the plant for processing. It would just stay at your station. But I'm not positive. And in any case, what does RTO stand for? So, dear listener, if you know, send me an email, classesandmail@gmail.com.
Most of those are like clerk's duty, so...
Yeah, I mean, dude, when I'm going to throw stuff in there, I'm like, hey, how do I know whether this is RTO or not? And they're like, just throw it in.
Alan just wanted to know how everything works.
I do. Dude, when I finally learned how the DPS machine works, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's so genius in its simplicity.
Just think, back in the day, we had to do that at our case.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so anyway, if you want to know how the DPS machine actually works... all I need is one of you to ask me, and I will talk about it on the show. classesandmail@gmail.com. Depending on your role in the grievance process, you might be required to use GATS. If you have any questions, I like to think of a GAT as like the hip-hop name for a gun. And so if you're in the grievance, you might have to use your GAT. Yeah.
There's Gatling guns too. So.
All right. So anyway, yeah, that's true. If you have any questions on access or your role in GATS, contact your district labor relations office. Step or informal. Well,
on that real quick on GATS pay, make sure when you get a copy of the GATS pay the management gives you, says don't say that it's pending.
Oh.
Because they'll have it where they'll just give it to you and it'll say on there it's pending. No, you want the one that says paid.
Oh, okay.
Not pending.
Oh, good to know. Yeah. I wouldn't have known. Yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Informal Step A grievances only enter in GATS when there is a monetary settlement. Formal Step A grievances. Every Formal Step A appeal must be entered in GATS, which will generate a grievance tracking number. The number should be included in the grievance file and provided to the union within 72 hours of the receipt of the appeal. The GATS number should be included on all decisions, and again, this is at Formal Step A. All decisions should be entered in GATS. All right, and that puts us, I got some other stuff to get to. Are we good with 23 minutes, or do you want to go on to the next section?
Well, how long is the next section?
That's a good question. Well, the next section is discipline.
That's going to be a long
one. It's pretty long, yeah.
Let's do this one and then the next one, because this one's going to be a while.
Yeah, yes, indeed. All right, so guys, thank you very much for listening, and get that music ready. All right. And so, Michael, when I point to you, you'll go ahead and press play. So thank you guys very much for listening, and we will catch you all next time. It works.